Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Carlos Colazo, first of what are going to be many organization, State of the Organization Prospect Podcast. We're going to do one of these for all 30 teams. And we're starting off with one of the A's. We're starting off with Carlos and the Atlanta Braves. Carlos has been doing Braves coverage for years. I've done the Braves list in past years as well. So this should be a very fun one to kind of dive into, not just where the Braves are right now on the prospect side, where they are at the major league side, but also kind of what they've done, what their strengths, what their weaknesses are, trends, looking at all of it. But how are you doing, Carlos?
I'm good. Excited to hop on the podcast with you, JJ. It's been a while. It's going to be fun to talk Braves with you. You were definitely doing the system when it was at the absolute top tier in talent rankings. It's not quite been at that level, but I think there's always interesting prospects to talk about with the Braves. They produce big leaguers regularly, so we'll have plenty to talk about today.
We can look at it and say, okay, what have they done lately? We'd say Spencer Schwellenbach is what they've done lately, because Spencer Schwellenbach stepped right into the middle of their rotation last year, really kind of filled a need for them. So that's a very impressive step last year. But I think it's fair to say that also with that, Carlos, that if you look at the last several years, the Braves have done a really good job of developing pitching and kind of keeping this kind of going by producing a pitcher or two or three a year who kind of steps in and fills a significant role.
Yeah, I think so, definitely. They've been super pitching heavy in their organization, really. I feel like almost the entirety of the time I've been doing this, maybe back when Michael Harris and Christian Pache and Shea Langeliers were topping the system, is kind of the most recent year when it wasn't dominated by arms, although we do have Drake Baldwin as the number one prospect in the system. But the bulk of the players in the top 10, the bulk of the players in the top 30 are pitchers. I think the Braves have a good mix of upper level pitchers who are ready to start contributing as soon as 2025. There are some younger pitchers with a lot of really exciting upside who are further away. Some players kind of in between who are either dealing with injuries or need to take a step forward in a certain area. But what stands out to me about the Braves is they've just consistently targeted pitching in the draft to a level that I would imagine rivals almost anyone in the game. You have to go back to that Shea Langeliers pick to find their most recent first round pick that's not a pitcher. Otherwise, it's been arms for them at the very top. They're one of the few teams who is not hesitant to take a high school pitcher at the top of the draft. There are drafts where they'll take multiple high school pitchers with their first few picks. So they spend a lot of their draft capital on arms. So it makes sense that they've got a lot of pitchers. And considering the sort of big league rotation they've had established at the major league level for a long time, I think that makes a lot of sense in addition to just their general strengths at pitching development. At this point moving forward, I think you're going to want to start to see them backfill some hitting. It would be nice if they had an internal shortstop or left field replacement for this offseason. They don't really have an obvious player in that regard. They're back on the international market. There are some interesting names there, but I don't think anyone that's taken a huge step forward and you can say this is a no doubt impact regular as a hitter from the international market yet. Maybe that'll change in the near future.
What is your sense? This is kind of a chicken and egg question, right? Which is, the Braves have been incredibly pitching focused with their draft, with their development. They've had a lot of, that's where they've had their success largely, on the draft and development. At the same time, all of that's come about at a time where they had this incredible 17, 18, you know, the prospect wave of position players who really kind of are still the guys that they're relying on. The Ronald Acuñas, the Ozzy Albies, the Austin Rileys. They produced essentially a team of position players, and then they made some other trades. You know, that's how they've kind of brought in the Sean Murphys. That's how they ended up with Matt Olson when they, you know, and Freddie Freeman was getting ready for free agency. But they also extended all those guys. So you could argue that they went pitching heavy for a very logical reason, which is if you know who your catcher is going to be and your first baseman and your second baseman and your third baseman and your right fielder and your center fielder, and those guys are all locked up for years, then logically you say, well, what are we going to need to do? We're going to need to keep producing pitching because we're not producing it. We don't have a spot for a first baseman or a third baseman or a right fielder, all these spots. Do you think that that was kind of a looking at the state of their team, they went in a pitching direction? Or do you think they looked at it and said, this is either the opportunity, this is what our strengths are, or was it a little bit of both?
I would guess it's a little bit of both. I don't know for sure if it's one way or the other, but I mean, everything you just laid out there makes a ton of sense. And we know with pitching prospects, to get one good pitcher, you maybe need to select five pitching prospects because all these guys aren't going to pan out. Injuries are real. We'll talk about with the Braves specifically. You just need so many bodies just to wind up with an actual big league pitcher on the mound. But I mean, the Braves have had a great reputation as a pitching development organization for years. I mean, longer than I've been doing this. So I think both. I think they still do a good job maximizing what their pitchers are doing, shortening the repertoires of young pitchers, actually letting their pitchers go out and throw innings. The Braves stand out to me as maybe towards the more aggressive on the spectrum of, are you letting your pitchers throw or are you really monitoring their workloads? It feels like each year they have like the three of the top five drafty debuts in terms of innings. A lot of their younger players are going to go out and they're going to throw. I think they've helped some pitchers in the past improve their strike throwing ability pretty rapidly. I mean, guys like Ryan Cusick, who they traded away, he looked good in the Braves system throwing strikes. A guy like Eric Hernandez, who is a recent draftee who's in the middle of this system now, both in terms of stuff and strikes, he looks much better than he did at Miami already. And then you've got younger guys like J.R. Ritchie and Owen Murphy who really know how to pitch. And I think the Braves have made some good adjustments with them. So I think it's kind of a combination of both. But again, can you think of an org? I cover the draft for us at Baseball America. I can't think of another team that's gone as aggressive targeting pitching in the draft specifically. There might be one, but they're up there.
I'll give for a year at least, I will give one, which is the Angels.
The Angels, yes. But like year over year.
They literally
like,
drafted all pitchers
Angels,
1 year.
The Angels have drafted a couple first round hitters in that range. Nolan Shanwell, Christian Moore most recently in the Braves. Again, you have to go back to Shea Langeliers in I think 2019 for them. They had two first round hitters that year, but yeah, go ahead.
And it's not just the first round. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's the first round and a supplemental first or the second round. And it's often it's the vast majority of draft resources have been put on pitchers.
Their most recent draft, they had typical 10 picks in top 10 rounds. They had one position player, his fifth rounder, Nicholas Montgomery. Outside of that, it was all pitching in the first 10 rounds. So that's where a majority of their money is going, a majority of their premium picks.
And the thing with that is that nowadays, especially if you said, when we're going to get into this, if we dive into this and we say there aren't that many position player prospects here, that's why, right? Like if you
I don't think it's a failure to develop hitters because I think you also have to give him credit for Michael Harris. He's a key player on their team now on the position player side. I mean, when I saw him in high school, I thought he was a pitcher. He was a two-way guy. I think that maybe is another element you could point to that the Braves have either done well with or they like these players, talented two-way players as amateurs.
Austin Riley.
Spencer Schwellenbach, you mentioned earlier. Michael Harris was a really talented pitcher in high school. And I don't know at the time.
Austin Riley was a pitcher who most teams thought was a pitcher. The Braves were one of the few who thought he was a third baseman.
Yeah, I mean, even Cam Caminiti, to some extent, was a two-way player in high school, although he was, I think, pretty solidly on the pitching side, just given left-handedness and what he can do on the mound. But yeah, that's a trait or a player profile that they've done well with and that they seem to like. But I think they have to get some credit for developing Michael Harris as a hitter. I mean, he was much better than we thought he was going to be coming out of the draft. But when they have taken some guys, they've hit on them as well. But yeah, I think more than anything, it's just they have clearly targeted arms in the draft, and their organization is pitching heavy because of that.
You hit on this, the thing that the Braves, it's been a very, I would say that Braves fans find it to be a too quiet offseason so far, because obviously Max Fried has departed. Charlie Morton is no longer there. He signed elsewhere as well. And there really haven't been a whole lot of moves. Again, I would say that this kind of is a team that you're kind of, this is what you have, in that when you have this many players locked up long-term, and especially, let's just be honest, many of them, there is a couple of moves that they could, I think that they would love to have William Contreras still now. The Braves have, the Braves on the position player side, I would say, we're going to talk about Drake Baldwin. The thing they've done best is produce position player, I mean, catcher prospects. They've done a really good job of developing catchers in recent years, but Contreras is the one that kind of they traded away and the one that got away.
Yeah.
But I would say overall, when you look at this, you would say like that this is not a team with a minuscule payroll. This is a team that was disappointing at times last year, but with kind of the same group that has won a World Series, that has been consistently until last year, the team that won the division year after year after year. Does it feel like to you that the window's closing, or does last year feel like a step back? But hey, if you lose an MVP, you know, which Ronald Acuna is, that does kind of leave a mark. And when you also have Max Fried miss time and guys like that, it's understandable that they had some struggles.
Yeah, no, I think Spencer Strider losing Ronald Acuna Jr., I wouldn't say their window is closing. I do think the division is pretty competitive. I think that's maybe a different question. The Phillies and Mets are ready to go, and I would imagine it's going to be a competitive division all the way through. But, I mean, looking ahead, the Braves, it wouldn't shock me at all if their offense was much better. I think, in general, this is maybe not a player development conversation, but I think this front office does a really good job in terms of assembling a quality bullpen. I think you mentioned the Contreras trade, but most of the other trades I can think of with the Braves, I think they generally know which of their prospects to move and which to keep. I mean, trades like Justin Henry Molloy, trading him and getting Joe Jimenez, trading Vaughn Grissom and getting Chris Sale, an MVP or a Cy Young left-handed pitcher for, I mean, Vaughn Grissom was a solid prospect at the time. I think his,
but yes, you would
we'll
do that
what
trade
happens with him, but a million times over, they would do that trade. I remember really struggling. What was the top three going to be when it was Michael Harris, Christian Pache, Shea Langeliers? The Braves keep Michael Harris, who we ranked one, thankfully. And then you have Shea Langeliers and Christian Pache, who are moved to get Matt Olson. So I think they have proven to make savvy deals and trades. They're keeping the prospects who you want to keep around. Again, sans William Contreras. He's pretty good. They've got reinforcements to help out the pitching depth this year if they're not going to make any more additions on the trade market or on the free agent market for the starting rotation. They've got guys like AJ Smith-Shawver. They've got guys like Hurston Waltrip. Even lower down, maybe not as high profile, guys like Drew Hackenberg and Lucas Braun, if they started making contributions to the big league team after performing at the upper levels of the minors this past season, that wouldn't surprise me. Guys further down, like Blake Burkhalter, I think Herrick Hernandez will move quickly, even though he's not as established as a pro. And then you've got younger guys. I just think they're going to have a pretty continuous window of pitchers moving forward. You've got Baldwin, who I'd imagine is going to take a pretty significant step or be a significant piece of this team. Now that there's no Travis d'Arnaud in the fold in the catching mix there, he has proven at the upper levels of the minors. Nacho Alvarez, I'm not entirely sure where his fit is with this team, because he's not a natural shortstop. Third base and second base are pretty locked down as long as Austin Riley and Ozzie Albies are healthy. But he has really special, maybe outlier contact skills, and I think the Braves are still pretty bullish on his ability to develop power and his defense at third base specifically. So he could play some sort of role. Beyond that, I think you don't have a lot of hitting reinforcements. But again, this is a team that in 2023 was one of the most impressive offensive teams we've seen in my lifetime. I'm sure it was your lifetime as well. I think they have the pieces already established with health to be one of the better offenses in the league. So I think they're going to be in a perfectly solid spot heading into 2025.
Before we dive more into the prospects, and don't worry, guys, this is Baseball America podcast. That's what we're going to do. One last kind of on that is, as we record this mid-January, as you said, there's really, shortstop is still Orlando Arcia, who kind of had a down a subpar year last year, really took kind of a step back. And I would say that that's a hole. That's one where there's needs improvement. And as you mentioned, left field is kind of the other one. They did. We know that Ronald Acuña will be back. They do have Michael Harris. They did acquire Jared Kelenic last year, but I don't think that you could comfortably say that Jared Kelenic has grabbed that job where you say, we're good guys. Yep. With that being the case, but if you said, okay, the Braves had, they have the ability to add one guy, right? Obviously, it's easier to add a left fielder in free agency on the market than it is a shortstop. But if you said they have the ability to add a shortstop or a left fielder, which one do you think is kind of more pressing for them, the hole for them to fix?
I think probably shortstop, just because you said it's a lot easier to find a corner outfielder than a shortstop. I mean, if everyone else in the lineup is humming along, I think Orlando Arcia would be perfectly fine to bat at the bottom of this lineup. But I think shortstop, because there's no obvious internal replacement really for either of these positions. I mean, John Hill is the most impressive prospect outside of the top two that we've mentioned, but he's quite a bit away from the major league level. I mean, he did not perform. The scout feedback on him this year is much better than his stats were, if that matters to you strongly. And he is still playing at the lower levels of the minors. They have some intriguing international shortstops who are highly regarded at the time of their signing, who haven't quite lived up to that hype. So maybe a few years down the line, there'll be a homegrown internal shortstop option. But I think for right now, I would say shortstop, if you could kind of just make an addition to the team, that's the area that I would go for. You?
And as you noted, not someone who's going to bat in the middle of the lineup or anything like that, just someone who's going to be really good defensively.
Yeah.
And not a complete zero, because they're looking for a complementary piece. Don't worry. Yep. They're getting more production than most teams get at second base, at third base, you know, in catcher. 100%. They don't need this to be a star, but they do need better than they had last year, is the way, yep. is the way to put it.
Yep. If everyone is going to regress from 23, they do.
So we're going to dive in now. Before we get to, we're going to look at the kind of totality of the system and all. But after this quick break, we're going to take a look at what the pitching that they have coming up, the pitching that's already seen, the AJ Smith Shoffers, the Waldrips. Are these guys ready to fill some of these needs that are sitting there for 2025 right after this quick break? When spring training arrives, major league teams know that they have to have depth. They have to have contingency plans. No major league team goes into the season planning to have five starters make all the starts. Being prepared for life and life's events is even more important, which is why I have life insurance through SelectQuote to protect my family's financial future. SelectQuote is one of America's leading insurance brokers with nearly 40 years of experience, helping over 2 million customers, including me, find over $700 billion in coverage since 1985. Other life insurance brokers offer impersonal, one-size-fits-all policies that cost you more and cover you less. While SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents work for you to tailor a life insurance policy for your individual needs in as little as 15 minutes. You invest so much time to take care of yourself and to be the healthiest, best version of you. SelectQuote's exclusive policies can reward that effort. If you're in good health, they work with carriers that can give you the same-day coverage for up to $5 million with no medical exam required. And these policies are more affordable than you think. You can get coverage for up to $1 million for as little as $20 per month. Head to selectquote.com and a licensed insurance agent will call you right away with the right policy for your life and your budget. SelectQuote, they shop, you save. Get the right life insurance for you for less at selectquote.com/BA. Go to selectquote.com/BA today to get started. That's selectquote.com/BA. And we're back. So, Carlos, right now, the Braves need starting pitching depth. I would say they don't. The good news for them is Spencer Strider's coming back. He may not be on the opening day roster, but he is anticipated to be on the roster by May, let's just say, in a realistic sense. They obviously have Spencer Schwellenbach, who took a nice step forward last year, and kind of they have Chris Sale. They have the Cy Young, the defending Cy Young, you know, winner. On their, you know, in the rotation, they also have Ronaldo Lopez. Okay, so this isn't something where we're saying, oh, where are they going to get innings from? They have effectively a playoff rotation right there. But obviously, as we saw last year, as we see with every team every year, you need a 5, you need a 6, you probably need a 7, you probably need an 8. AJ Smith-Shawver, Hurston Waldrop, Drew Hackenberg, you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Are those guys ready to fill those roles, or is this where the team probably needs to go out and get a veteran, get someone else, and kind of make Ian Anderson, I should throw in there too, who was a AAA all last year, and they've talked about. But how much can this team fill that need for internally, do you think?
I think all three of these guys would be pretty useful players to at least give them a chance to fill those roles as depth starters. I would say with Waldrop, maybe you were expecting like a louder 2024 season than what he showed, just given the really impressive pro debut that he had. He didn't take the steps forward in a strike throwing department that I think you would want to see. And I think there are still some pitch arsenal questions that maybe push him more towards a reliever ultimately. But I don't think he's at the point now where they've like crossed him off as a starter. So the fact that he is a college product, he's pitched at the upper levels of the minors. He has a velocity. He has one of the better secondaries in the system in that splitter. For him, it purely comes down to, can he throw enough strikes? Can he add enough fastball command to where that pitch doesn't get hit hard when it's over the middle of the plate? And he just has kind of a tough combination of a fastball life that doesn't play when it's over the middle of the plate and a secondary that is just tricky in general to land in the zone for strikes. So he's in a situation where he's just working behind the count too often, I think. And you're either going to need to see the fastball life shape up to where he doesn't need to be precise with it. Or the command just has to come. AJ Smith-Shawver, I mean, we have him ranked as the top pitcher in the system still. It's not a huge departure from where he was at a year ago. I think the youth, the athleticism is still on his side. I mean, he was just pitching in his age 21 season. He made some really impressive adjustments down the stretch from a fastball command perspective, I would say. The fastball life and the slider effectiveness were not as loud as I thought they were going to be, I guess, a year ago at the major league level. The fastball played down a bit. The slider wasn't quite as sharp, but he still has a four-pitch mix that's promising. I think he's probably the guy I would point to and say this is your best option for like this depth starting role. I think he has the stuff to fit in that role fine. If we've got guys like Chris Sale and Spencer Schwellenbach and Strider when he gets back taking care of the top of the rotation, having AJ Smith-Shawver as a guy who's going to pitch as a four or five and be up and down throughout the year, maybe he establishes himself early. But I think it's still a similar question with him. He's going to need to be consistent with his fastball command. If we don't see the sort of 2023 AJ Smith-Shawver fastball life, that is, I mean, if the life of that pitch comes back to what it was, if the slider becomes more of a 70 than the like above average offering it looked like for most of 2024, again, you can afford to have less precision. But I think the Braves are still quite high on him. They've asked him to pitch in pretty big roles already. And I think he still has a chance to make some strides in 2025 as a 22-year-old. And then we can get into guys like Hackenberg and Lucas Braun, because I think
we're going to talk about Hackenberg in a second,
but yeah,
I did want to make the note. I think one of the key things that did make the Braves so effective last year, as far as their starting rotation, is the thing that is going to make the development of Smith-Shawver, Waldrop, Hackenberg, some of these guys, Bryce Elder, maybe bouncing back, yep. Ian Anderson, which again, well, we could talk about Ian Anderson if we want. He's not prospect eligible anymore, but got to see him in AAA, and I think you're going to hope. I'll just say this: if you're counting on Ian Anderson, you're hoping when it comes to spring training, you're just seeing a little bit more closer to the Ian Anderson that we saw a couple years ago when he was pitching in the postseason and really good. It just wasn't there last year. Like, it's something where you can't just say, I've heard a number of the reports where it's like Ian Anderson, who was been really good for the Braves in the past. It's like, yes, he has, but post injury, we just haven't seen yet that same Ian Anderson that you really can count on. There's a reason that he spent a long time in AAA last year. It's not because he's forgotten what it's like to pitch in the majors. He's done that before.
Yeah.
His stuff just not, you'll still see the changeup every now and then, but everything, the breaking ball still is a problem, and his fastball just doesn't have that same little bit of quality that it had that really made the changeup play up as well. Just needs a little bit more. But the thing that jumps out about all of this is I kind of do look at the Braves as an organization that with this current rotation really needs almost six starters at any time, because what really made Chris Sale effective is Chris Sale pitched on extra rest a lot. Ronaldo Lopez pitches on extra rest a lot. When Spencer Strider comes back, one of the things you might want to do with him is every now and then give him an extra day of rest because he's coming off of a, you know, significant injury. We want all these guys to be still upright, functional, and effective in October. And you look at like the Braves last year, Chris Sale, 177 innings, you know, like he didn't make 30 starts. You know,
177
Ronaldo Lopez,
innings these days almost feels like workhorse load.
Right. It does feel, but Ronaldo Lopez was really good. It's a 1.99 ERA, a 2.92 FIP, 135 innings and he made 25 starts. Like they picked their times for him. And then they also pulled him pretty quickly. You know, Schwellenbach, 123 innings. Obviously, he wasn't up the whole year. But you put all this together, and the thing I would say is the Braves did a really good job last year of saying, Bryce Elder's making a start tonight. And that would kind of help buy an extra day for a Sale. Sometimes it was a Waldrop. One time it was Smith-Shawver. They did that last year. I think I struggle to believe that a 31-year-old Ronaldo Lopez, who kind of did kind of run out of gas at the end of the year last year, that their plan this year is it's 33 or 34 starts and it's 180 innings. It's going to be something where they're going to want to pick their spots for these front of the rotation starters. Yep. And with that being the case, that does depend on Smith-Shawver, you know, all the guys we're talking about. And I did want to bring up, like you mentioned, Drew Hockenberg was really a kind of took a step forward. I feel like second half of the season at Double A Mississippi last year had a couple of exceptional outings. Now Mississippi is a good place. You know, it can be a good place to pitch, which does help that. But I think it is, it's not crazy to think that he could be someone that you start thinking of, especially second half of the season. If he has a good first half for Triple A Gwinnett, is that fair?
Definitely fair. I think he could very easily fit this sort of Bryce Elder role as like a depth starter that you can go to and hand innings here or there. Definitely doesn't project to be like a number two or number three. I don't think he has the stuff or the command for that profile, but he's got a pretty diverse pitch mix. He was, I think, one of the top players in the system in terms of ground ball rate. It was a 54% ground ball rate. He was second in the system with 144 strikeouts. So he was pretty effective. He pitched at three different levels. He is advanced enough that I think if he was called upon to start even early in 2025, I think he could do it. I think he made some adjustments with his secondaries in 2024 that really helped him, mostly like separating a curveball from a true like harder cutter that he developed. His curveball is one of the better curves in the system. Most of the pitchers in the Braves system are slider oriented. I think that's probably the case for most systems at this point. Slider is just more in vogue, but he has this like lower arm slot. It's a two seam fastball that gets a lot of life, a lot of movement to his arm side, and is going to keep hitters off the barrel. So I think he can just keep you in games, mix and match. Sometimes he'll get a little bit wild. That's maybe the one piece of his development that, like, being more consistent with his command throughout starts, not having the blow up inning that really gets you into trouble. And also, there's not a ton of separation from the changeup with his fastball. So maybe just getting a little bit more separation to make that pitch a bit more effective, because I don't know that it was one of his better offerings. But it's a four pitch mix and it's an advanced college pitcher. He's got some upper minors experience. I mean, he was really good in AAA in 2024. It was just four starts, but it was a 1.52 ERA. Maybe not the same strikeout to walk, but I think he's a guy who he's going to be able to have some success, even if he's not posting like elite strikeout and walk rates. And I think that's going to be a valuable piece to any rotation, but especially one that's competing.
Okay. And then we got the young guns that you mentioned. Cam Caminiti, J.R. Ritchie, Owen Murphy. Obviously Caminiti's number one out of this. We have him ranked top.
Yeah.
Of that group. How much of that is just on pure talent, and how much of that is that he's the one who hasn't already had a significant injury?
I think it is almost entirely on pure talent, because you could really take their top six or so, ending with J.R. Ritchie, I'd say, is the tier break for me, and you could line up their pitchers in really any order as long as A.J. Smith-Shawver is kind of the top guy. I think Smith-Shawver has the best combination of youth stuff and command, but With Caminiti, yeah, it's he's young, he's unproven, but he has, I would say, at this point, just given some of the warts we've seen from Smith-Shawver, I would say if you wanted to point at Caminiti and say he has the highest upside of any pitcher in the system, I think that's perfectly justifiable. It's a fastball that all sorts of scouts that I talked to, both pre-draft, excuse me, and post-draft, have said has a chance to be a double plus offering. It's just really easy velocity from the left side. It's a changeup that can be an above average pitch. I'm really curious to see how the Braves are able to develop his breaking stuff, because pre-draft with Caminiti, hitting a consistent slider, getting a consistent curveball, he threw both pitches. They're in between and kind of just rolling. I think he's much more natural at throwing a changeup. So that is going to be the piece for him that I'm curious to see how it gets developed, if it's good. But tons of upside, and just let's see what he does in pro ball.
I would much rather hear, especially for a lefty, the way you laid that out, than I would if it was like he doesn't have any clue how to throw a changeup, but he can spin a breaking ball. Because I do think nowadays there are enough different ways to throw a breaking ball that at some point you're going to generally figure out a way. I mean, it could be, you mentioned, it could be a traditional curve. It could be a knuckle curve. It could be a traditional old school slider. It could be a sweeper. It could be that power slider where it's really, it's got some movement, but it's more a cutterish almost. It could be a cutter. There's just so many ways nowadays. There's so many pieces to the toolbox. There's so many tools in there to try to get you to a breaking ball, especially if you're lefty. You're going to need the changeup. Got the fastball. Okay, that's a great developmental to-do list for a pitcher.
And I think Caminiti specifically with the Braves is a lot of fun, because, I mean, he was a multi or a two-way guy in high school. He wasn't always focused on pitching. So just the pure arm talent that the Braves pitching staff is going to have to work with here is massively exciting to me. I mean, his fastball shape, I guess, is not ideal, but he missed a ton of bats in high school. I mean, there were scouts who thought his fastball shape already was one of the more impressive, like livelier pitches in the class. So they're working to optimize that even more already. As the Braves do with most young pitchers, they're probably going to shorten up his arsenal. He's going to focus on one breaking ball. I would imagine it's the slider first. It'll be fastball, slider, changeup, and we'll see how that pitch takes a step forward. But he's also really young for the class. So he's just the guy that I get most excited about when you want to dream on a player. The other two, I think, have a better blend of like performance in their time. In the minors, both J.R. Richie and Owen Murphy have been highly effective, throwing a lot of strikes, with solid pitch mixes as well. But as you mentioned, they both have some injury concerns. I think if Owen Murphy was healthy, you can make a case for him as the top pitcher in this system. He might have ranked number two overall with the start that he had to the 2024 season. He's utterly fascinating, and it was brutal to see him get hurt and make just seven starts because he's got some outlier traits.
That's the other thing we want to talk about when we talk about Braves pitching, though. They obviously have had a lot of injuries. You know, we talked about Strider, you talked about Murphy, but I think you also have to say, like, this is something that I would frame it this way, and I want to see if you agree or disagree. I feel like that the Braves are less risk-averse about going after pitchers. There are teams who look at it and say durability is a key component of what we're looking for. Mm-hmm. And I would say that the Braves, as we've seen with a guy like a Spencer Strider, who's now had two significant elbow injuries, but in between has been also exceptional. Yep. There's a little bit more willingness to be like, we're drafting at the end. We draft at the back of the round every year because we're always good. We'll dial up the risk component. We go after pitchers. We go after right-handed pitchers who throw hard, generally consistently. Is this a, man, the Braves draft all these pitchers and they keep getting hurt? Or is this a, the Braves are willing to draft pitchers who have a risk of getting hurt and they hope to get them through it, a la Spencer Strider, who, or even like you could even go, if you want to go old school in this, a la Chris Sale, who was, I think, viewed as much more of a durability risk when the Braves acquired him. That's why they were able to get a guy with a basically Hall of Fame level resume for Vaughn Grissom.
Yeah, I think it's both of those. I would say the Braves and the Dodgers are the two orgs that stand out to me as teams that are just willing to take on injury risk with their pitchers in the draft specifically. I mean, you look at some of the players they've taken in the draft. Spencer Strider was a guy who missed his season before his draft year with Clemson with injury. He made just four starts. They took a shot on him, and now he is probably a number one or number two pick if you redraft that. Schwellenbach was another guy who had injury issues before the draft. The Braves were happy taking him. In the most recent draft, Luke Sennard in the third round, he didn't pitch at all this year. He was a player that a lot of scouts were really excited to see. They take him in the third round with his injury. It's no big deal. Carter Holton did pitch. He had a surgery shortly after signing. I'm not sure if that was one of the Braves were aware of it. I'm pretty sure they were. So they're just willing to take pitchers who are injured, whether it's because they think they're getting a value, because other teams are discounting the players because of that injury risk. They're happy to scoop those guys up, rehab them, get them back. With both the Spencers, it's worked out really well so far. There are some guys that it obviously hasn't worked out so far with, but and then Owen Murphy and J.R. Richie, those are two guys who, as far as I know, were pretty completely healthy, and they just happened to get hurt. So it definitely works both ways. If you're drafting a lot of pitchers, odds are you're going to wind up with a lot of injured players regardless, but they do stand out to me as a team who they're just willing to take these guys that are hurt, saying, no, we believe in the arm talent. They're going to come back. They're going to get healthy. We might get great value with this. So yeah, I think that's definitely a draft or a selection trait that we have to keep in mind for the Braves. They're not super afraid of the risk of injured pitchers.
When we're talking about that, I think that there's a lot we could do, but I think we have to look at the 2022 draft. Mm-hmm. In the 2022 draft, you mentioned Murphy, you mentioned Richie. Cole Phillips has now had two elbow surgeries. Mm-hmm. This is all the pitchers they took that year. Blake Burkhalter has had a significant injury, missed the year. Seth Keller, Adam Meyer, Jason Franks, Cedric Degrandpre, and William Silva. The only two pitchers, we went through all those, the only two pitchers they've taken in that draft who haven't had a significant injury are Ian Mejia and Landon Harper. If you just want to illustrate it here, you are talking about, the only example I can come up with similar to that is the Rangers had that year that they took all the high school pitchers. And by the way, we didn't include David McCabe in here, who is a hitter, a third baseman, but he also missed half of a year with Tommy John surgery. At some point, unfortunately, it did become the contagion actually escaped, the pitching side of the locker room, the clubhouse, and did pick off a hitter as well. I know that there is the possibility you could look at that and say, oh, that's awful. How are they doing? But as you said, this is kind of the Braves, some injuries are going to happen, but the Braves also are willing to take that risk to say, look at Spencer Strider. Some teams weren't going to be interested in that guy because he was coming off of Tommy John surgery.
Yeah. And if you look at that board you just showed and you're like, oh, that 2022 draft, not so good for the Braves. I mean, we're still pretty excited about Owen Murphy. We're still excited about J.R. Richie. That draft class, they got Drake Baldwin. That draft class, they got Ignacio Alvarez in the fifth round when he's a pretty
good
radar guy from my perspective. I mean, Adam Meyer, we'll see. I'm pretty excited about what he's going to do this year. He still ranks on the top 30. He's got a lot of arm talent. But yeah, I think it really does illustrate their tendency to just have no fear in taking injured pitchers. And again, I think they don't rank the highest of our org talent rankings by any means, but there's still plenty of pieces to like here on the mound for them.
When we say people say the Braves are, we look at the Braves as a bottom tier farm system right now.
Yeah.
And the key aspect of that, I would say, is we're not looking, we look at talent and we're not looking, there's no reason that a team needs to be able to field a complete all-star lineup of prospects where you say they've got a guy at this position and two at this and one here and one here. That's not, you're not needing to do that to be successful as a farm system. But as we get into talking about Drake Baldwin, the thing that does jump out is this is a system that is really still quite thin. And again, there is an intentionality to it in some parts about when you look at who they're drafting and who they've held on to in trades and all that. But they really are counting on Drake Baldwin. If you're a Braves fan who's really hopeful, we need a position player prospect to step forward this year or the next, you're really hoping about Drake Baldwin, who, to Drake Baldwin and the Braves' credit, I do feel like 2024 was a great step forward season for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if that's what classifies as a breakout for you. I think you could call it that pretty easily, but across AA and AAA, so the entirety of his season was spent at the upper levels. He hit 276, 370, 423, 16 home runs, 19 doubles. That slash line might not look super exciting to you, just hearing it or looking at it on the page, but both Mississippi and Gwinnett are pretty tough places to play for hitters. They're power dampening environments in general. But if you look at the underlying metrics for Drake Baldwin, both the power and the swing decisions really jump out. His 90th percentile exit velocity was 105.9. That was one of the better marks in Atlanta's system. Again, it's a very light system on hitters, so maybe you don't need super gaudy exit velocities to stand out here. But I do think he's a guy who's going to have above average power potential, be a high on base percentage player. His career walk rate is 14% or just under at 13.9%. He does not expand the zone very frequently. So even if he's not an above average pure hitter, he's going to get on base a lot. He's going to hit for power. I think he will be an average or an above average offensive performer. The bat to ball skills are probably like the weakest element of his offensive game. And even then, there were some scouts who were maybe a little bit skeptical of how adaptable he was going to be with the barrel in the zone. He took a really impressive step forward in just his contact skills against secondaries, which secondaries in the past have given him some trouble. So I think you can look at him and say, hey, you're getting an average hitter who's going to have above average power, who's going to get on base, who's going to stick behind the plate and do a pretty good job there. None of the tools are really sexy or jump off the page. But when you look at the overall profile, left-handed hitting catcher with power and on base skills, that's a very valuable player. For me, it's like a first division regular. If the hit tool just winds up being better than what we expect it to be now, it could be more than that. But I don't know, JJ, like what's the one area of the game we're really concerned about? He has track record. He's got power. He's got OBP. He's got a premium position. There's not like a specific area for me that's like, man, this is a real huge question mark. So he just feels like a pretty safe, reliable, everyday sort of player at this stage. I mean, he doesn't run really well. He's like a 30 runner. I don't really mind if my catcher is a 30 runner. So it's a pretty complete package to me.
The question I would have is okay, because this is the hardest part, I would say, for when we're ranking, when we're talking to people about evaluating a minor league catcher. The bat is a lot easier to kind of look at and feel comfortable mm-hmm. about what he is and all that. Defensively, all the aspects that go into being a catcher, does he have, like, is he ready to basically, like you said, to kind of step in? The good news for them is again, this is the team that has extended everybody. The Braves are not just handing the keys to running the staff to Drake Baldwin in any way because mm-hmm. they have a catcher. They have a veteran catcher. But is he ready right now, or is he ready at some point quite soon this year to step in and be able to handle that aspect of the job as well mm-hmm. to a point where you have a comfort level that, like, let's say, okay, Murphy's going to miss a month or whatever. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. we're good. Drake Baldwin's the guy.
Yeah, I think you could feel pretty comfortable with him behind the plate. Again, like, he's not going to be some elite defender. He's not going to be like a gold glove caliber type. But I got really encouraging feedback on just his ability to manage a pitching staff. His relationships with pitchers was really impressive. I don't think his arm is the greatest. It might be fringy or below average in terms of pure arm strength, but he's got a very quick exchange and release. He threw out 20% of base runners this year, which is an average rate at the major league level. So if he can maintain that from the minor to the majors, he'll be fine. He's a one knee guy, JJ, like everyone is. So
well, I mean, you might like that.
But no, I think he can do everything at a perfectly fine level. The one question I'll have is, like, how is the arm strength going to play at the major league level? Because it was perfectly fine in the minors because he gets rid of the ball. That maybe is the one area I'm like, is he going to be a liability, or is he just going to do everything well that the arm plays up enough to where it's fine?
I will say with that, if you're, Braves fans listening to this are going to be like, he threw out 20% of base runners. They remember Tyler Flowers. I think Tyler Flowers threw out 2 base runners in a year for the for the Braves one year. So I think it was like 53 steals, 2 something like that. So like, they're not that worried if it's like, oh, he can be slightly below average at that. They've experienced worse than that, in recent years. But the other thing with Baldwin, I would say that we have a pretty good track record. He comes from a program, Missouri State has produced a number of catchers, and he's done it now. I would say he has a long enough track record in the minors. You're right. Like, as we talk about, we're working on the top 100 as we kind of record this. Most of the catchers in the top 100, they have something where you're like, that is the, it's not the potentially fatal flaw, but that's the thing that could derail them, right?
It was I think either... you could say with Baldwin, he doesn't have a single tool that you could say this is the best tool for all the catchers we're talking about. But I don't think he has a clear weakness that you can point out that a number of other top 100 catchers might have.
Right. Most of the catchers, the top 100 catchers we have right now, I would say either face more questions about whether they can stick there. They have really good bats, but are they really a catcher long term? Or are they, you know, and I'm talking about the Harry Fords of the world, you know, and guys like that. Or is the guy coming off of a, you know, a season ending injury? Is Jefferson Cuero, you know, which is a freak injury, but is he going to have the durability? Or it's other guys who you're like, okay, Edgar Cuero has reached the upper levels, but is his bat going to be good enough?
Yeah.
It does feel like that Drake Baldwin's kind of like the Goldilocks zone of it's not the sexiest bat. It's not the biggest power. It's not the best arm. It's not even the best receiving, framing, blocking, or anything like that. But every part of it is, yes, this is acceptable level. And especially, I love to say, like, catching prospects develop can develop slowly because it's a really hard job. Drake Baldwin's actually developing reasonably quickly, I would say, as you mentioned, 2022 draftee. But on top of that, he's stepping into a situation where they're not going to need him to take over everything right away. He can kind of ease into a role. And really, if you're the Braves, I think your ideal scenario is you get to at some point, like you're comfortable with a job sharing arrangement. They've done that a good bit. They you know, most teams have two catchers now, but where, okay, this kind of fills a little bit of your DH role as well. Hopefully you're getting enough production offensively from Murphy or Baldwin to where you're like, some days we can DH one of these guys. And that becomes in 2026, 2027, a way to really turn this into a job share where you're getting production from both of them. And you're kind of getting Baldwin to the point where at some point you are comfortable saying, this is just his job. Like, because I do think there is enough here to say at some point he could be the Braves' number one catcher, you know, in a post-Murphy or a Murphy takes a lesser role as he gets older or gets traded or whatever kind of situation.
He certainly seems to be well set up to be the Braves' catcher of the future moving forward in like a post-Murphy world, whenever that happens. But you're right. It's a good situation where he doesn't have a ton of pressure. He can come in and be kind of a piece of a catching tandem. If you really want to get granular and get into the weeds, I think you could say that maybe Drake Baldwin could afford to put the ball in the air more to the pull side. But I'm not tempted to really say that's a huge issue when he also hit 16 home runs this year. Like, he's doing it enough. So maybe you could look to that and say, hey, like, he hits the ball this hard. We still feel like there's untapped potential as he's able to either, as he gets to peak maturity. I mean, the power typically comes last for position players, but that's an area of his game where maybe you could say, oh, there is some untapped potential here. Maybe we get a little more excited about the power 2 to 3 years from now when he does start to have his best exit velocities come at a little bit steeper angles. The air pull rate is a number that doesn't really jump out to me right now. Again, I don't necessarily think you need to just change his swing. He's doing everything pretty well right now, but that's maybe an area you could look at and get excited about him too.
As we wrap this up, I'll ask you one more question on this. Like, we talked about, we do want to talk about position players at least a little bit. You mentioned Baldwin, you mentioned Alvarez. Taking Baldwin out of it, Alvarez probably with this team ideally profiles as a utility. And again, a good utility player, but like, play some third, play some second. If Albies is hurt, he can be your second baseman. If Riley's hurt, he can be your third baseman, but not like he's not going to move those guys off those positions. Is there, far away, whatever it is there a position player prospect other than Baldwin in this system right now that you look at and say, this guy could be a starter, this guy could be a average or better regular for the Braves at some point, even if it's years away?
Yeah, I think that guy is John Hill, who we have ranked just outside of the top 10. He's a shortstop signed out of the Dominican Republic in the 2023 class. The headliner that year is Luis Guanipa. We've got him ahead of Guanipa already. Guanipa's tools are maybe a little more exciting, but John Hill is a really good athlete. He's a great runner. There have been scouts who have seen double plus run times from him. He's a very fluid and instinctual defender. He's got good hands, average arm strength. I think the hands and the footwork and the actions are probably above average. So he can play shortstop. He should be able to sit there moving forward. And if the bat never comes around and develops, then he can fit more into that actual utility role, playing second and third. I think he's even fast enough that I don't know why he wouldn't be able to play outfield if that's something the Braves wanted to do moving forward. Again, despite his line, I think I mentioned this briefly earlier in the podcast, the overall offensive line is not super impressive, but more than any other hitter kind of in the middle and back of this system, I got more positive feedback from scouts on John Hill. They like his swing. It's a low maintenance, easy swing. It's like a solid approach. He's a contact hitter now who still has some projection physically. So he's a guy who does a lot of things well and has a pretty solid athletic and defensive foundation now. If you can just get him to take the step forward offensively, he gets really exciting. And I'm even excited about him now. He's going to be one of the breakout players from this system for me. So we'll see what he does in 2025. He's just going to be 19 years old. He's not played above A-ball. He had 39 games in A-ball this year. So he's a bit further away. But I am very excited about him for a number of reasons.
One in the books. We have 29 to go. So we've done the Braves now. We hope you enjoyed this. If you have questions, we're going to probably do I think at the end of this, we may do a mailbag. I may set up podcast at baseballamerica.com again so we can, if you have questions, you can email them. We may do a mailbag at the end of all 30 of these. But one down, 29 to go. We hope you enjoyed this. Do subscribe to the Baseball America podcast. If you're watching this on YouTube, we love having you on YouTube as well. Subscribe on YouTube. Like, let us what you know. If you put comments in there, when talk about a mailbag, easiest way to do this, comment on the YouTube, ask questions. I try to go in there and respond to a lot of them right there. If it's a good question, we really do try to respond. And we do appreciate, everyone for supporting the Baseball America podcast. For Carlos, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.